didn't move. I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown. You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another Monday night football game to prepare for here in Philadelphia as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 29. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where Greg Cosell and I go deep into the tape here on the Eagles' big win against the New Orleans Saints. We look forward to the New York Giants and this big matchup that's going to take place here at Lincoln Financial Field on Monday night. Next, we've got Two Technique with my buddy Ike Rees, former Eagles linebacker. We're going to talk a little bit about his playing days in a brief conversation about something that you don't want to miss. It was a very interesting discussion here with Ike. Especially talking about Jim Johnson and his playing days under Jim Johnson. And then we finish it off with Saturday Scouting. Bill Rabinowitz from the Columbus Dispatch. We're going to talk some Ohio State Buckeyes and the number one team in the land. Some of the guys off the field and what they bring to the table. But before we get into all that, it's time to welcome in my favorite guy in the room, the most popular guy in the room as he gets a text message right next to the microphone. The man with the plan, my esteemed producer, Brian Thomas. What's up, BT?
Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Another week here. And you got
first
home win, and you got to spend it up in the radio booth, if I'm not mistaken, with Merle and Mike.
Yep, up with Merle and Mike, just marking and logging the game. But it's interesting. Everyone hears the game obviously from their radios and at home, but it's interesting to be behind the scenes and kind of see the what goes into making the match between Merle and Mike. So I was up there, and it was great game. Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so it was guys were wearing pink and pink rally towels. So. It was nice to be up there for a comfortable win.
You know, it was great to see, really on both sides of the ball, the dominance, how effective a lot of these guys were. You saw the E-word execution on both sides of the line of scrimmage. The offensive line played as well as they had played all season long for an entire game, for sure. Keeping Sam Bradford upright, I think it was one sack allowed, really very little pressure throughout the game. And then in the run game, you just saw so much production in terms of being able to get out in space. The sweep run game was a huge part of the Eagles' game plan this week, and they were very, very effective with it. And then you go to the other side. Fletcher Cox is getting a ton of love this week as a breakout game with three sacks and two forced fumbles. He's been dominant this entire season. He was able to get the production this week partially because of some help on the back end. And, it works in concert. That's constantly the way it works. With coverage, it helps the pressure. The pressure helps the coverage.
Billy Davis says it. Every week coming out, he goes, coverage affects sacks, and sacks affects interceptions. So if a quarterback wants to hold the ball, you're going to get sacks. If the quarterback wants to throw it and he's getting pressured, you might get some picks. So
yeah, and that was absolutely the case this week. You know, there was a play, I want to say it was Benny Logan's sack. It was a great play by D'Amico Ryans, and just the ability to stay disciplined and not jump on a shallow cross. And he knew that he had something coming behind him, but he stayed put, didn't take the cheese. And, him being in position prevented Breeze from making a throw. D'Amico, again, on Fletcher's first sack, the one that didn't cause a fumble, D'Amico was actually on a blitz and got his hand up in Breeze's face, forced him to eat the throw, and he takes the sack. Coverage on the back, and they did such a great job of defending those shot plays from the Saints. The job against the running backs we talked about on the Eagles Insider podcast this week, just the ability that that Malcolm Jenkins showed in man coverage, Jordan Hicks showed in man coverage against guys like Mark Ingram and C.J. Spiller and Kyrie Robinson, a group that going into the game, they averaged, I want to say it was 8 yards per target in the pass game over 48 targets, like an exorbitant number. They averaged 1.22 yards per target this week on 11 attempts. So just such a great job by the Eagles defense really throughout the entire game. Obviously that touchdown where there was the miscommunication for Ben Watson, notwithstanding, just a great team effort overall.
Yeah, I thought, Walter Thurman, I'm a big fan of him ever since everyone's loved him since he joined the team, but I thought he played well.
Yep.
Obviously, Malcolm Jenkins, everyone's been giving him a lot of love, but he was playing with a lot of passion even late in that game. You could tell what it meant to him, and I'm just noticing this defense is really rallying together as a group. They really seem to be infectious in terms of the way they play off each other, so If you said coming into this year, I remember you saying this front seven was going to be one of the best front sevens in the league, and it's really kind of showing right now.
No question. I mean, you have the guys like Fletcher Cox and Benny Logan, who are week in and week out have just been dominant against the run. They had the pass production this week, but you have guys like Jordan Hicks, who's playing at such a high level, who I was a big fan of coming out of Texas.
He literally looks like D'Amico Ryans on film, right. On tape. I watch it, I'm like, he's got even the way he lines up, but he's clearly not a rookie.
No question. You've got Hicks. You have D'Amico. When Kendricks gets back, Connor Barwin is doing his job on the edge, and Brandon Graham. Marcus Smith made some plays this week. Kiko Alonso isn't even in the lineup right now. When he comes back, that brings you an even extra dimension, especially in the coverage aspect of things. Just really, really excited about this front seven moving forward. But we've got a ton to talk about. Let's get this party started here. The man that everybody came to listen to, Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Let's get it started here with Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Join me once again here on Saturday Scouting, NFL Film Senior Producer Greg Cosell. And Greg, we are preparing for another week of Monday Night Football here. It's week 6 in the NFL season. The Eagles coming off a huge win against the New Orleans Saints. We're preparing now for the New York Giants. Let's first look back to that big win on Sunday against New Orleans. There's a ton to talk about. Obviously, the Eagles' most complete game on both sides of the football. Let's start on offense.
Yep.
And with quarterback Sam Bradford, a performance that obviously started off not as good as you would have hoped. He had the two red zone interceptions. That first throw, let's first talk about that first red zone interception. Not the wrong throw in terms of the wrong target.
Right.
Just, not exactly the throw you want to make in that situation.
No, and I think first, before I just comment on that, I think what's really important about Sam's game was the fact that he had those two red zone interceptions early.
Exactly.
I think it was on the first two of the first three possessions, if I'm correct.
Exactly right.
And, the way the season had been going up to that point, you were kind of expecting bad things to keep happening. And he bounced back. But you're right. On that first interception, throwing the ball to Riley Cooper was not the wrong receiver. It was not a bad decision. It was just the wrong throw. That ball should have been thrown with a little more air under it to the back pylon, and it would have been an easy touchdown because Browner was totally out of position. He was beaten.
No question.
He just made the absolute wrong throw.
Yeah, and that's why I brought that play up first because, and you touched on it, the resiliency to kind of fight through that,
yep,
fight to face the adversity, and then you saw the most complete game that we've seen, the most complete four quarters that we've seen so far from Sam Bradford in an Eagles uniform. I thought that the last three quarters he was composed. You saw the comfort in the pocket, and obviously the pass protection was a big part
of
that.
Better.
But you saw the ability to move. I can remember a 14-yard completion to Riley Cooper on a crossing route where he sidestepped in the pocket, found a throwing lane, was able to deliver the football. You saw some.
That was a third down play, I recall. That was at the time a very big throw in the game, as I recall.
Yeah, and you see things like that, and it really gives look. If you were an Eagles fan that wasn't feeling good about where the season was at, I think Bradford's performance on Sunday gives you some hope.
Yeah. And, one thing we talked about before we started the podcast, and we don't know yet if it's a tweak that they made in their offensive approach or it was specific to the Saints, but prior to the Saints game, they played four games. In those four games, they lined up in what we call 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, and two wide receivers, only 22 times in those first four games. Against the Saints, that 12 personnel, they lined up 24 times.
Wow.
Okay, so more in this one game against the Saints than they had in the previous four. But most important, here are the numbers. 12 runs, 12 passes. The 12 rushes gained 50 yards. You know what Bradford was on those 12 throws out of 12 personnel?
What's that?
11 for 12.
Wow.
For 158
wow.
yards and a touchdown.
Wow, that's really impressive. And we talked about the 12 personnel last week, and you said you thought that you were surprised that they hadn't gone to as much 12 personnel. And we talked about,
Chip didn't call me, by the way.
No, he did not.
He didn't ask me my opinion on that.
Maybe he listens to the podcast.
Right.
But, we talked about it last week that, look, when you only run 50-some-odd plays in a game, you don't have the ability to expand and be able
right.
to do more. So now you saw 87 snaps, I believe, they were on the field for, not including penalties
right,
and things
right.
like that. really just the ability to stay on the field, and that allowed you to do more. You saw more of the misdirection boot action that we hadn't seen through four games. You saw, you know, more in the screen game. You know, we saw much more in terms of the different variety of sweep plays, and the sweep was very, very effective.
Very effective in this game.
After, you know, we've seen it early in the year against Dallas, where it was, I think they ran it four times for a combined negative 8 yards in the four runs, but just really, really effective plays. But the offensive line, Kelsey had his best game. I thought Matt Tobin played at a high level. Jason Peters grinded through with an injury. Alan Barber had his best game of the season. So really just overall, Brent Celek as well in the ground game was just
I thought
excellent.
Brent Celek had clearly – two guys, Celek and Kelsey,
yeah,
clearly had their best games. And they're two of the most important blockers on the sweep.
No doubt.
And it's funny you say that because on the DeMarco Murray 24-yard run, which was a sweep –
and that's the one that set up the Josh Huff touchdown.
Correct. And on that play, as we know, what happens is when they sweep, they pull both – let's say they're sweeping to the left. They pull the center, Kelsey, and the left guard.
Right, typically. Okay. Just depending on the front. But
typically
it's the
typically that's
guard.
What they do.
Yep.
And on that play, what made it so great by Kelsey is he's supposed to pull, but I forget which linebacker shot the A-gap right away. And if Kelsey had pulled, the linebacker would have blown up Murray in the backfield.
Right.
And Kelsey made a great adjustment reacting to that shooting A-gap linebacker and picked him off because ultimately that guy was his man if he pulled.
Right. Yep,
so
exactly.
He saw where his man shot the gap and he made a great adjustment, blocked him, and that allowed Murray to get on the perimeter and run for 24 yards.
No question. So really just overall, and we saw the ability as well, and we – in the past, we had seen them try to do this, to try and break the trend of running to the back and away from the back, to the tight end, away from the tight end. They were able to do that very, very effectively against New Orleans. You know, we saw Ryan Matthews, it was a 30-plus yard run.
That was a key breaker because that was the same sweep,
right,
except that Matthews was on the side of the pulling lineman as opposed to on the opposite side, and that was a key breaker.
Yeah, so now you're breaking your tendencies there, and just a lot of different things from the Eagles' offense, which was very, very good to see. Defensively, it's funny. This is being hailed as Fletcher Cox's breakout game, you know, as a dominant performer.
He's been pretty darn good up to this point.
That's exactly right. I mean, he's playing at
well. That's because of the sacks.
No question.
Right. That's just because of the sacks.
And you know, that was one of the things I wanted to point out in my article this week was, and not because look, you're not taking anything away from Fletcher Cox, but you know, sacks are a function of both pressure and coverage. And on those three sacks, there was a great job by D'Amico Ryans on one play, Jordan Hicks on another play, the secondary in general on another play. These are shot plays where Fletcher Cox had time to be able to get home for the sack. Great plays by Cox, no question, but whole team effort there to get them.
I thought that his sack fumble was a really outstanding play and spoke to how great he was because that came out of their base 3-4.
Right.
And it came on run action away from him. So he started to flow to the run action. And he redirected. And, you know, when you're that big and you can redirect as quickly as he did, that was really impressive. And then to make the sack and then the athleticism to not only make the sack but to then dive on the ball, that play showed everything about Fletcher Cox.
No question. And you saw even on the second sack where he's lined up over center, he beats the center to the left. And then just that burst in the open field, just in that short area where he just sticks his foot in the ground and he just goes. Was very, very impressive.
Well, it's funny. I know, you know, you and I both watch a ton of college tape.
Right.
And I remember when he came out of Mississippi State where he played a lot of different positions. I truly thought in the NFL he could be a 4-3-3 technique.
Right.
You know, the D-tackle position where it really relies on initial quickness off the ball. I thought he was that kind of player.
Right.
Now, obviously, the Eagles now play a 3-4, so he's not a pure 3 technique. But I thought he could be that one-gap penetrator with his quickness.
Yeah, because I remember there were times where he lined up even in a two-point stance coming off the edge at Mississippi State, which remarkable versatility there for the big guy. Benny Logan had another strong game.
He's been really good every game.
He's been excellent. I mean, those two guys have just been pillars up front for the
Eagles. Taylor Hart with a lot of snaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you look in the behind them, D'Amico Ryans, I thought, made a number of plays that didn't go in the stat sheet, but that led to big plays for the Eagles' defense. And then Jordan Hicks had another strong game. At linebacker.
Just a really solid player.
Yeah.
A really solid. And you know what's interesting? He doesn't come off the field. You know, one thing that was very evident in this game, and I imagine it'll continue, is on third and long, the Eagles are now a dime team. If they play against three wide receivers on first and second down, they play nickel because you still have the run as a meaningful option, and they want to keep DeMeco Ryans on the field. And I guess when Kendricks comes back, it'll be interesting. I think he'll replace Ryans even in the nickel. But I think with Hicks and Kendricks playing a nickel linebacker, that's a pretty good duo at nickel linebacker.
Yeah, absolutely. And you factor Kiko Alonso into the mix as well, and just a great linebacking core. The potential for this front seven, I said it earlier in the podcast, is just the sky's the limit for this group. It's a really good group overall. And then in the secondary, Malcolm Jenkins has just been outstanding.
He's been, to me, we talked about Fletcher Cox. To me, then Jenkins is the second best player on this defense.
Yeah. He has been outstanding. I focused on in my column earlier this week the job that they did containing the Saints running backs in the passing game. And I went back and I looked at the numbers, and through the first four games, the Saints targeted their running backs 48 times out of the backfield, 12 times a game, and they averaged, it was about 8 yards an attempt. 8 yards a target in the passing game, which is a high number, and obviously that takes into account an 80-yard touchdown by C.J. Spiller.
By the way, they tried that exact same play in this game from a different formation, and Jenkins was on it. He did an they actually motioned Spiller across the formation because they tried to get Jenkins trailing the play, and he did such a good job of recognizing it and fighting through any traffic that was there and actually beating Spiller to the spot almost.
Pressed him to the sideline, turned and find the ball. Yep. It wasn't a penalty. I mean, an unbelievable play. Read a couple of screen plays as well. And you just saw, look, and I said those numbers, what the Saints had done leading up to the game. Nine targets for the Saints running backs in the pass game. 1.2 yards in an attempt there. So just a great job by the Eagles. It was Jordan Hicks.
I think the only thing that the coaches, and this is what coaches do, and they should do this.
Yeah.
The one thing they'll harp on is third down.
Right.
They got beat too many times in man coverage on third down. Different guys, too.
Right.
The Saints targeted Biggers in dime. The Jenkins actually got beat one time when he was on Cooks in the inside slot on a deep over route. And I think the Saints were 8-for-16 on third down, and that's a number that Bill Davis will look at and want to make sure they start to get better at that.
And they've been good on third down leading up to the season. This was a bad game for sure. So just an overall, I mean, another great performance by that Eagles defense that I think has just been undersold at this point, you know, from a national scale. So moving on to New York, a team that, look, they've won their last three. Very easily could be 5-0 from their first 2 weeks of the season. So this is obviously a tough test here for the Eagles. Starting on the offensive side of the football, where you see the weapons that Eli Manning has at his disposal. You've got Odell Beckham, of course. You have Reuben Randall. Victor Cruz is on the sideline, but Dwayne Harris is coming from Dallas. Larry Donnell, who I think people are still sleeping on after he had that huge start to last year.
Right.
Kind of fell off a little bit. Just a really interesting group of receivers, and they use them in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and the one thing that we sort of charted at NFL Films in preparing for the matchup show every week is teams that line up in no huddle. And a lot of people might be surprised that after the Eagles, the Giants are number 2 in the NFL.
Really?
They have more no huddle snaps than any team in the NFL than the Eagles.
Interesting.
And you wouldn't necessarily think that about the Giants, but this is the second year with that new offensive coordinator, obviously not new, second year with Ben McAdoo. He came from Green Bay. It's a very timing, rhythm-based offense. The ball comes out of Eli's hands fast. He's hard to blitz.
He's executing at a very high level.
He's hard to blitz unless it's third and long.
Yeah.
And the timing he's developing with his receivers is very, very good. He's not making bad throw. I mean, he threw an interception last week at the end of the first half in the red zone. That would be viewed as bad, but he threw it to the man coverage. It just was not a good throw.
Right.
But it wasn't one of those throws where you go, where's he throwing it? He hasn't really made those throws this year. So they line up in a lot of different formations, a lot of different packages. Last week, they were predominant 11, one back, one tight end, three wide. It was almost exclusive in the whole game. They're starting to use Beckham almost like the Packers use Randall Cobb. He lines up all over, including the backfield.
Yeah.
And that gives you a different look. You have to be prepared for that.
No question about it. And Shane Vereen has become such a huge part of that offense. The way that he's been moved around and the way that they try and create matchup problems with him for defenses, whether it's on linebackers, on safeties, they do a really good job. And obviously the screen game is a big part of that. But just in the underneath passing game, the quick passing game, he's been a big factor.
They're chain movers in the pass game because they don't really run the ball. They run it to be effective, but they're not really that good at it.
Right.
But they run it enough. Now, not many people run well against the Eagles' defense. So this is a game, if the Giants are to win, here at Lincoln Financial, they're going to have to throw the ball.
Yeah, no question about it. But you look at this the Giants passing attack again. We talked about the quick hitters. They also have the ability to get vertical yep. on you as well. And Odell Beckham and Randall can get deep. And Eli Manning's not afraid to test teams vertically.
No. Eli is a no-conscience passer. I mean, he trusts what he sees. He trusts his receivers. I think that's in his DNA. He was like that from the time he came into the league. Obviously, through the years, it's led to some bad interceptions. But he's an amnesia quarterback as well. He just plays the next play.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, you want to get pressure on him if you can. The nature of this offense compared to the previous offense he was in is such that the ball is out very quickly. If I'm not mistaken, after Tom Brady, the ball is out of Manning's hands through the early part of the season quicker than any other quarterback in the league.
Interesting. So you watched the game against Buffalo, and obviously that's against Rex Ryan. And
I did.
His blitz-heavy scheme. How did he react to going up against Eli at this offense where the ball does come out quickly?
They didn't blitz as much as they normally do.
Right.
And they certainly weren't as creative with their blitzes.
Sure.
Because you have to be careful with that. See, that's the thing. There's different philosophies when you play a team that gets rid of the ball so quickly. Some coaches believe you're wasting your time blitzing because you're not going to get there.
Right.
So what you're doing is wasting a player.
Yeah, because he's not in coverage.
He's not going to get there, so now he's not in coverage.
Right.
And he's not going to get to the quarterback. Now, if it's third and nine, that presents a different scenario. And obviously, Bill Davis and the Eagles defense hope they can get the Giants in long yardage, and then it's a different situation. But just in the context of running their normal offense, I'm going to be very anxious to see how the Eagles game plan to play the Giants' offense, because that ball is out quickly.
Yeah, no question. And you talk about pressure as we change gears here to the Giants' defense and Steve Spagnuolo, who's no stranger to Philadelphia, and you know, because of his time here as an assistant. But pressure is a big part of what he does.
Their defensive numbers are not great, though.
No. Anyway, no. They're 32nd against the pass in terms of yards per game. They're number two against the run. I think both of those numbers are a little – I don't know how you feel about them, but I think – maybe their defense isn't as good against the run as number two, not as
right.
bad
I would agree with that.
As number 32. So there's a little bit of give and take.
And
there.
I think they're getting a little better. You know, I think they're a defense that can be attacked and exploited, but I think they're getting contributions from players that people might not know about. Unga is a free agent linebacker who you're going to see a lot of because Beeson's in and out of the lineup,
right.
And Unga plays in their nickel anyway,
yep.
But he may be in their base as well. They're getting a nice contribution now from Jay Bromley, a former Syracuse player that people might know in this part of the country, who's starting to play more and more snaps. I think he started last week, and he's been giving them a nice contribution inside at D tackle. Pretty talented, good size, good length. The one thing they're struggling a little bit with is they don't really have a pure pass rusher.
Right.
And that's always a concern. And Steve Spagnuolo, I think, is probably blitzing a little more than he'd ultimately like to, but he needs to try to create some pressure, and that's causing some issues on the back end.
Sure, and so you've got, I think the two corners, obviously we know what DRC can do.
Right.
Dominique Crouch-Kamara, one of the more physically talented corners in the league. And Prince Mukamara, I think, has come along nicely. I think,
yes.
You know, would you agree? Watching him over the last couple of years, I see that he's improved incrementally each year, a former first-round pick. The interception he made against Washington where he jumped that dig route was
excellent. And I was just going to mention that. I'm glad you brought that up because that was a film study interception. And we know that the Eagles run a lot of the same concepts and principles every week. And I'll be anxious to see if he tries to jump some routes, if he tries to guess based on right. what he thinks he sees. Because that intercept, you know, it's funny. As soon as he made that interception, I was watching that game on TV because it was a night game, as I recall.
Yep, it was.
And one of the things the Redskins had done a lot of up to that point was what I call that bang play action with those quick throws,
right.
which the Patriots do exceptionally well also. And as soon as Cousins took the snap and hit his back foot, I knew what the play was, and obviously so did Prince Amukamara, and he jumped it, and they showed it on TV, and he jumped it way before Cousins released the ball.
It was three steps before Pierre Garçon hit the top of his
stamp. Exactly.
Yeah, it was a great jump there by Amukamara. The safety, Landon Collins, they use him a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
You know, down near the line of scrimmage.
He's also played some man-to-man on tight ends, which
Jordan
will be very
Reed.
Interesting this week.
Yeah, no question, and there were a couple times in that game against Washington where Cousins had Jordan Reed. Jordan Reed beat Landon
right.
Collins, and he just couldn't get him the football
right.
for a number of different reasons. That will be an interesting way, how the Giants decide to deploy him against the Eagles, and if the Eagles are able to exploit a matchup.
Yeah, and that gets back to, you know, we talked about the Eagles and their use of 12 personnel. Who knows? Maybe this is a game where 11 personnel fits better with three wide receivers, and because that would put Landon Collins perhaps on the tight end man-to-man if they choose to play man-to-man.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. One last guy, the one person that always shows up whenever I watch them, especially late in games now, Nikita Whitlock, the defensive tackle from Wake Forest, who was a fullback and plays special teams, and now they're giving him some reps on the defensive side of the ball, and he comes in and he plays his 7-8 snaps and gets a sack and a tackle for loss and calls it a day. He's fun to watch.
It just looks funny with a number 49 playing defensive line. It doesn't seem like that's right, you know?
Yeah. This is the same guy that I saw playing for the Demon Deacons is you know, wreaking havoc against the Bills and against the other teams that they've played, San Francisco as well. But
Big game. This is a really big game.
No question.
I know in the matchup show we're giving a whole section to it this week.
There you go. Get
Eagles
some love.
Giants a whole section. And who would have thought, you know, 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the Eagles, that the Giants Eagles on Monday night would be a really, really big game.
Yeah, division's on the line here for you know, this early stage of the season. But it's going to be a huge game. Very, very excited to watch it with you on Monday night here from the NovaCare Complex. Greg Cosell, I appreciate the time here on Chalk Talk once again. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Fran.
Well, he did it again. Greg killed it once again. Loved his breakdown of the Giants. Before we get to the rest of the show, BT, give us a scoop here, man. What are we looking like on iTunes?
Getting great love from iTunes. Everyone giving us good comments and always love the feedback because, like we said, we want to tailor the show to what you like, what two techniques do you guys want, what interviews do you want on the Eagles Insider podcast. So feel free to go on there, give us your take on what you like, what you don't like, and we'll tailor the show to you guys.
That's awesome, man. I love it. Love hearing from everyone out there. And, again, it's the best way to support the podcast. If you like it, please just go on iTunes real quick. Quick rating, quick comment. It helps boost us up in the rankings, and we get to improve the show each week. And I know we have taken different suggestions from people over the course of the week. And what do they want to hear from in two technique? What can we ask Greg Cosell about in Chalk Talk? If you've got any questions for me by any chance, I'm very, very happy to answer. So leave us a comment and give us a ranking and help us out.
Don't be afraid. You know, if there's something you don't understand and you want some more clarification, hey, we'd love to learn more about the screen pass. We'd love to learn about what a tunnel screen is. We'd love to learn about cloud coverage versus sky coverage. You know, those are things we can tailor to you. So just let us know what you're looking for.
Exactly right. All right, let's keep this ball rolling here. I had a great conversation with former Eagles linebacker Ike Reese. Let's get that going here.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
Joining me this week on Two Technique, a very special treat, Eagles game plan analyst Ike Reese, former Eagles linebacker. And Ike, I wanted to talk to you this week about, and I'm kind of asking you this cold, we didn't necessarily plan too much for this, what was your favorite blitz that you ran when you were here with the Eagles under late defensive coordinator Jim Johnson and that great defensive scheme, just obviously a hyper-aggressive scheme, Blitz Inc., as the fans like to call it. What was your favorite pressure?
Man, there's so many of them to choose from. And let me just state this first about planning Jim's defense. First of all, a lot of pressure on you to do your job in that defense. He certainly demanded that from everyone. And if you were fortunate enough that he trusted you to be out there during that time, third down blitzing, the best time of the game, you certainly had better run them right. And we used to always say, if he took the time out to draw up a blitz that was for you to go in there and get it, you had better be going 100 miles per hour. So let me just preface what I'm about to say by saying, when my number got called from time to time, yeah, you got happy. It was like it was like a kid on Christmas when your number got called. So I used to be the nickel linebacker, and we had an oaky defense, and I played the joker position in that defense. So my responsibility in that defense at times would be to run line stunts with the D lineman. And me being the smaller of the four guys having to run those stunts, I didn't like it when I had to be the sacrificial lamb.
Sure, you had to be the penetrator.
For the big guy, the penetrator. So when Jim would call the blitz, in my favorite way, would have one of the big guys doing it for me and freeing it up for me, it was awesome. And I can remember a game against the Green Bay Packers on a Monday night. We went up there and beat them in the rain in that game. And he called a run blitz for me, and I got Amon Green. It opened up for me perfectly, too, in the A-gap. It just, you know, both tackles, I believe it was Hollis and Corey Simon, did their jobs of picking the guard in the center, opened up beautiful for me, and I was able to get Amon Green down in the backfield for a 5-yard loss. So when he drew your number up and it worked, that meant he was more likely to call your number again.
So how did that work? Did you feel like you had to like earn your stripes as a penetrator before he was able to give you the opportunity
yes.
as a looper?
Yes. And because I was a backup player to right. some of those starters, he certainly had more trust in those guys. And it was like, okay, let him go in there and be the sacrificial lamb for those guys. And eventually I did earn his trust. And it was through, honestly, the 99 season and the 2000 season where we lost Hugh Douglas. And they had to put me out there. They had to put me out there on the field. True story. I tied for the team lead in sacks in 1999.
So as that joker, was mm-hmm. that mostly like just take us through that position for those who weren't necessarily aware of what the responsibilities were in that package?
Well, it was a guy. It could be any. You could be part of the rush right. package, or you could be part of the coverage. It was right. basically an extra lineman slash linebacker that Jim would use for his zone blitzes on third down. And if he wanted to give you a 4-man rush, I would be a part of the blitz package. Or if he wanted someone to guard the hashes in between the hashes at the yardsticks, I could be that extra defender in coverage. And that's why you had to be an athletic guy as well as someone that was at least tough enough and physical enough to run the line stunts as well. So it came with a lot of responsibility. I enjoyed it because I felt like he wouldn't have given it to me if he didn't think I could do it. And like I said earlier, earning the trust of Jim Johnson was a big thing. It was a huge thing. I mean, when you consider only Brian Dawkins had his trust.
There you go. Perfect stuff. All right. So, Ike Reese, I appreciate the time here on Saturday Scouting. We will get you back here on the show on a longer version here.
You got to have me, man. Anytime, brother. Anytime.
That was some great stuff there from my main man, Ike. Does a great job on Eagles game plan each and every week. You can check him out on a number of different segments here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com with Anatomy of a Play and Progress Report, Scouting Report, and, of course, Eagles game plan each and every week. I know you enjoy the time you get to spend with Ike Reese each week.
Love the early mornings when we shoot game plan. He always kind of brings in that early morning flavor. So enjoy working with Ike. Love hearing him on the radio.
No question. Well, if you listen to Ike on the radio, if you listen to us here on the Eagles app, there's a really quickly – I'm just going to teach you how to subscribe to the podcast. You go onto your native podcast app on your smartphone. You go and search for Eagle Eye in the Sky. You hit subscribe, and now the show comes to your phone each and every week. It's as easy, as simple as that. You don't have to do anything else. It'll come to your phone. You can listen whenever you want on your drive home, on your drive to work, when you're doing chores around the house, when you're going on errands to the supermarket, whatever you want to do, you can listen at any point. So real quickly, you can go on, subscribe, and you can get this show to your phone and listen whenever you want. So let's keep this show going. Let's wrap it up like we do every week. Let's talk some college football.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
Joining me this week on Saturday Scouting, the Buckeyes beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch and the author of the book, The Chase, How Ohio State Captured the First College Football Playoff, Bill Rabinowitz. Bill, I appreciate the time here this morning to talk about the Ohio State Buckeyes. And before we get into the Buckeyes, though, it's not often that I get to have one of these guys from Saturday Scouting that actually covered the Eagles at one point in his career. I'd love to hear what your favorite memory is from covering the Birds here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, friend. I'm not sure favorite story word. Now, in hindsight, maybe it's fun to look back on it. But I was at the Bounty Bowl game with the snowballs, and I remember these snowballs coming at me, not at me, but in my direction, and thinking, "Oh, I could die covering this game. This would be wonderful." So that's what I remember most about covering Eagles games. And the Vet was obviously just such a horrible place to watch a game. The press box, the windows were streaked, and you could barely see some of the stuff. It was all part of the character of the place, I assume, but it was not exactly Jerry's world, put it that way.
No question about it. Well, it's great stuff. I love hearing from people that were around at that point and just what the team was like. But now on to Ohio State, and obviously the big discussion here, and it's pretty interesting to see how quickly a narrative can change, because 6 months ago, everybody and their mother knew that Ohio State had three elite quarterbacks that could lead them to a national title run. One of them now has moved on to wide receiver in Braxton Miller. You've got another who's been very, very up and down on the field, and another who's been unable to take the job in practice from the player that's been up and down on the field. So you've got Cardale Jones, JT Barrett here dueling here for this quarterback job. We know what they can do on the field. We've seen a pretty good sample size at this point from both Jones and from Barrett. What are those two like away from the field? Who, do you get a sense that – because I feel like it's interesting that Barrett was named a captain even though he was not named the starter. So, obviously, he brings some leadership there.
Yeah, he does. And that's probably the best thing about J.T. Barrett is his leadership, his poise, his maturity. The captain's vote was done by the players. Obviously, who wins the starting job is not done by the players. So, J.T. Barrett is a very mature guy. He's one of those guys who's kind of born old, just born that way. When he was in, like, fifth grade and he had gotten overweight because he'd been to his cousin's house for the summer and ate too much, and he knew he was too heavy for Pee Wee football, and he told his dad, "I want to work out with you at 5 in the morning at the Y." And he did. Every morning he'd get up, and people would give his dad a look. Like, why are you dragging your kid to workouts? And JT would actually say to those people, no, I asked him to come. He's not dragging me. I'm asking. So that's kind of JT. That's kind of who he is. As a player, you know, he's not Braxton Miller as an athlete. He doesn't have Cardale Jones' arm. But his arm is very good, and he is a very good athlete. It's just that on the scale of superlatives, he's just very good. He has been up and down. He has not really taken advantage of the opportunity to take the job from Cardale Jones, as you said. So he's going to certainly come back next year. He's only a sophomore in terms of eligibility. The job will be his for at least 1 year, you would assume. As far as Cardale goes, he has an NFL arm. There's no doubt about that. He's a very smart guy. He kind of hides that sometimes. It's kind of hidden at times, almost on purpose, from what people tell me. But his story, and I wrote about this in my book, his story is just a remarkable story. Grew up in Cleveland, very difficult upbringing. Had a mentor at the age of 14 that really helped guide him and really helped him escape what most people don't escape. And it's a remarkable story. So, yeah, he's been a little inconsistent this year, but people have to remember, he only started 3 games last year. And so he's still very much a finished product.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be really interesting because when Cardale Jones does declare for the NFL, I feel like that will be one of the big questions is, what is he like away from the field? All the different Twitter controversies that seem to follow him, you know, and that have reached the public eye. I'll be really, really intrigued to see how that narrative grows when he does declare for the draft at some point, whether it's next year.
So he's not a guy that you have to worry about. Is he going to get in trouble? He's not one of those kind of guys at all.
All right, well, sharing the backfield with those two guys, you've got running back Ezekiel Elliott, who has been just lights out since he really has taken over that starting job. What is Elliott like away from the field?
He's goofy, too, honestly. He comes from a family. His parents are both athletes. They both played at Missouri. His mom was a heptathlete. His dad played football. Very driven guy, very friendly. One of these guys who just likes to cheer people up. He's just a happy guy. Very competitive. Anyone who takes Ezekiel Elliott, again, you'll never have to worry about him off the field. He'll be one of those guys that is the leader, one of the leaders of the team.
I think one of the biggest stories here in terms of just his journey since he arrived in Columbus and where he's gone from then to now. Braxton Miller, you know, who was hailed as the next great quarterback, Ohio State, obviously had a great year under Urban Meyer as the starter. He gets hurt. Now he makes the transition to receiver. Obviously, I think a lot of people kind of have an idea of what kind of a guy he is, but really, you know, just being on the inside there and knowing what these guys are like, what kind of character guy is Braxton Miller from an off-field leadership standpoint?
He's grown into being a much better leader. When he was a freshman, and again, he was thrust into the starting job before anyone planned. Terrell Pryor was going to be the quarterback that year before his stuff happened. So Braxton Miller was thrust into the starting job as a true freshman. He's a quiet guy by nature. He's an introvert. And it was difficult for him to be that guy freshman year, and they struggled with 6th and 7th season. Certainly not because of him entirely, but he was not ready on the field to be a starting quarterback at Ohio State. he has grown. His work ethic has gotten much better. Urban Meyer raves about his leadership now. He is an introvert. He's not a guy who's going to he kind of avoids the media when he can. Friendly, we have I have a good relationship with him when I talk to him, but he's not a guy who seeks out attention at all. In fact, he shrinks away from it. So another guy who's never had any off-field issues, never going to get in trouble or anything like that. You know, the big question with Braxton Miller is that adjustment to wide receiver. It's pretty clear that he can't play quarterback anymore. He has not even attempted a pass at Ohio State this year, and that we thought that would be part of the plan. So he's strictly going to be a wide receiver, I would assume. And it's been an adjustment for him, and you would expect it to be because he's new to the position.
And then shifting to the defensive side of the football, where Ohio State is just full of big-time recruits that have turned into quality players in the Big Ten. We'll start in the front seven, where obviously Joey Bosa steals a lot of the headlines. You've got Adolphus Washington, the nose tackle there. Daron Lee looks like a future stud. Raekwon McMillan as well, the youngster, the sophomore. When you look at that front seven, where does the leadership come from? Who is kind of the guy that rallies the rest of his teammates, and who do the coaches rely on in that area of the field?
I would say among the front seven guys, it's Joshua Perry, linebacker, and probably Adolphus Washington with Joey Bosa growing into that role. Joshua Perry is one of those guys you want your daughter to marry. I mean, he comes from a great family, always does the right thing, very mature. You could probably spend the day trying to find character flaws in Joshua Perry and come up empty. I mean, he's just that kind of guy. Adolphus Washington, I always enjoy talking to Adolphus Washington. He's a charming guy, very low-key, very friendly. He's very sweet-natured. I mean, coaches love him. The one thing that he's had to work on is being meaner on the field. He's getting there, and he's had a very good year so far. He's by nature kind of more of a gentle soul than Michael Bennett, for example, last year, who did have a nasty streak to him on the field. So Joey Bosa is kind of a different personality. He is kind of Joey Bosa, and I can't say I know him all that well, honestly. But his talent is, he has not put up the numbers this year. I think he's been credited with half a sack, but he has been just a force. He's only getting a half a sack because he's being double-teamed and triple-teamed sometimes. And so he's going to go at or very near the top of the draft. So, depending on how the Eagles season goes, you may be in the Joey Bosa sweepstakes, but he's not going to last very long.
And then just looking up at the secondary, you've got Eli Apple, who's actually from the Philadelphia area, from South Jersey, Tyvus Powell, Von Bell, a number of different defenders there in the secondary. Who do you see as kind of the flag carrier there on the back end for Ohio State?
I think all four of them, honestly. I mean, I think, I didn't mention Daron Lee as a linebacker, and he's another high-character guy. He's a fantastic player. I think he's going to be a star in the NFL. He's got that burst. He reminds me of Ryan Shazier in that way. He's very determined to be great. Among the back end guys, I think Von Bell is probably the best athlete of the four. He was a five-star guy at a Georgia that they got. He's a little on the small side, but he's just a playmaker. Very confident in himself, and he'll be a very good pro. Tyvus Powell, in fact, I just wrote a big story on him. An interesting guy because he was not a five-star guy. He's really made himself into a prospect. He's a junior. I would suspect that he would come back next year. I'd be surprised if he went in the drafts. But, again, anything can happen. Eli Apple had a very bumpy start to his career at Ohio State, and it turned out he had an iron deficiency. And they almost ruined his career, but he got it taken care of. He's had a banner year this year. Kind of on the quiet side, but he has certainly blossomed in terms of personality this year because he had to. He's kind of the veteran. All of a sudden, he's the veteran. And he's from New Jersey Voorhees, I think. And he's going to be a good pro, I think. I'd be surprised if he's not a quality pro. And was there somebody else you asked me about?
It was Eli Apple, Von Bell, and Powell. But, I think that you look around this whole team, and it's just full of talent, really just a credit to Urban Meyer and that staff and the way that they've been able to bring people in. Bill Rabinowitz, I appreciate, again, the beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch. You can follow him on Twitter, at BR Dispatch. I appreciate the time here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
Happy to do it, Fran. Thank you.
Great stuff there from Bill. Really great stuff, especially about the quarterbacks, JT Barrett, Cardale Jones. Really interesting hearing from him about Ezekiel Elliott and Deron Lee and Eli Apple, the safeties, Tyvus Powell and Von Lee. So really, really interesting stuff there from Bill. If you're an Ohio State fan or if you're an NFL draft fan, that was an interesting conversation for sure.
So we're looking for matchups this week. What do you got?
Yeah. So
by the way, watch Jacoby Brisket.
Jacoby Brissett.
I keep wanting to call him
Brisket. You're making me hungry. I know. We're shooting this at night.
Hey, he is from North Carolina, so probably some good brisket there. Thought he was a little bit like five. Love the footwork, but there's not much around him, so it's really hard to kind of compare him when you're watching Joe Fontaguisco catch routes over there. So.
Am I saying that he is five? He's not going to be the second overall pick, but. Kind of remind just the
I,
way
I like I like kind style. Of I like his leadership because he was there. He kind of runs what he has. Right. But he was dealing with ugly pockets all game long, and I just was watching him move. So I like his footwork. I like what he brings to the table. I just would love to see him around something more. So
yeah.
But what do we got for this week? What do you got for me to watch?
All right. So this week we've got Ohio State, Penn State, which is obviously a huge matchup.
Local matchup.
No question. So
the Fighting Rotundies.
A guy that we just talked about, right, with Bill Rabinowitz is Ezekiel Elliott, the running back, who I think is the best draft eligible running back. He's a junior. When I went to watch him, and I was a little bit hesitant, you know, when I first went in because, you know, coming out of that scheme, there's a lot of misdirection, a lot of different things that from a window dressing standpoint that you can create running lanes for a back like that. Man, he was so much more than I expected when I went and watched him this offseason. And he clearly, I mean, to me, there was no big hole in his game. I mean, he's got the athleticism.
Really?
He's got the size. He's got good ball security. He catches the ball out of the backfield. He can hold up in pass protection. His vision is great. He's got a great feel in the open field. The guy does everything really, really well. Really competitive runner as well. Breaks tackles.
I was
going to
say, he runs very hard.
He's outstanding. So. I would expect that when he does enter the draft, whether it's in 2016 or in 2017 as a senior, he's going to be a first-round pick.
Better or worse than Todd Gurley coming out? I guess I know it's difficult with the injury.
Yeah,
but
in terms of what he was.
Yeah.
That's tough.
So you think he's a top 10 pick when he comes out?
I mean,
potentially.
That's tough.
Potentially.
It's tough to say. If he's
right. I know not knowing lists, not knowing what team needs are, but he is top 10 talent.
He is very, very talented. Like, to me, he's definitely a first-round pick.
Enough said.
No question. So Elliott going up against his Penn State defensive front that, look, they've got some players there. You know, Austin Johnson is the one that I like the most, the nose tackle.
Philly product.
Is he? I don't think so. I think he's a Maryland kid.
Oh,
Austin
is he?
You might be right. I have to go back and look. Austin Johnson's is an impressive guy. He's really stout at the point of attack. He's got good size. He's in the 320 range. And he's got good athleticism. Made a lot of plays in pursuit. Showed the ability to make tackles in the flats one-on-one with running backs. So really impressive guy that I saw last year. And now he's breaking out this year. When I was saying in the summer that I liked him more than Anthony Zettel, who is a senior, a lot of people really liked him and how disruptive he was as a three technique last year. When I said that I like Johnson more, a lot of people kind of raised their eyebrows at me. I said, really? I'm surprised to hear you say that. Johnson has broken out this year, and he has turned into a guy that I think is going to be a pretty high pick. Now, do I think he's going to be top 20? Probably not. But I think that he's going to be higher than a lot of people imagine. So you have Johnson. You've got Zettel. Carl Nassib has turned into a pretty disruptive guy. 6'7". I believe he's in the 270 range.
11 straight games with a sack. I watched the game, and he's had 11 straight games with at least one sack. So I thought that was impressive.
I mean, here's the thing is that do you remember a couple of years ago there was the kid coming out of SMU?
The big kid.
The Bengals. Blanking.
Marcus.
Marcus Hunt. Marcus, yes, thank you. I was at the Senior Bowl.
Marcus Hunt.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of Marcus Hunt.
Raw.
And so, a little bit raw. Not as much raw. Actually, his technique's pretty good. The problem is he's kind of stiff in his lower body. You know, in his ankles, in his knees. When you see him trying to turn the corner, he really struggles
has
to do
issues.
That. So, you know, what is he going to be at the next level? He's not an explosive edge rusher. I'd like to see him get stronger. So is he a developmental 3-4 defensive end? Is he a base left end in a 4-3? I'm interested to watch Nassib and where he ends up going. But regardless, like I said, you've got three draft prospects here on the defensive line for Penn State going up against
Austin Elliott. Johnson from Galloway Township, which is right outside of Egg Harbor Township. So South
there
Jersey.
South Jersey.
So
good call.
I remember saying that he was an Eagles fan.
Somewhat
so I was
local.
Like, so
there you go.
Local guy.
Good call. All right, so next one, I'll kind of breeze through the next two, but you've got Michigan State wide receiver Aaron Burbridge, who really has come out of nowhere this year and has been a huge player for the Spartans, and really the first 4 weeks of the season was outstanding. Kind of reminds me a bit of an Anquan Boldin, not the most explosive guy, not the most quick or, you know, with change of direction, but great hands, really physical after the catch, is a pretty good route runner. You know, shows the ability to be able to get open on his own, run isolation routes because he shows pretty good technique at the top of his stem and because he's just so physical at the catch point.
How big is he?
I want to say he's in the 6'2". I think he's like 6'2".
Oh, so he's...
Yeah, I mean, he's got good
size.
He's
got some good range on him.
Yeah, he's got good size. He doesn't have great size. He's not 6'4", 6'5", but he's got good size. And he's going up against a guy in Michigan, Jordan Lewis, who I have not studied yet, but... Listen, this Michigan's defense
don't
is
count
playing,
out.
Michigan defense playing very, very well.
Don't count him out.
No, and he's a little bit undersized, but he's playing from everyone that you know has watched him. Everyone says that he's playing at a very high level. So when I do watch this Michigan State Michigan game, that will be one of the matchups I'm excited to see because Lewis is a junior, undersized. There's not really a standout in the senior class at the cornerback position. If he decides to declare,
his opportunity,
he,
right.
This could be a good opportunity for him. So that would be one matchup. And then going into the Big 12, you've got Kansas State offensive lineman Cody Whitehair, who plays left tackle. I see him as more of a guard. I think he's got good athleticism, you know, surprising athleticism for his, you know, what you would see when you're looking at him on the cuff. But good technique, shows the ability to anchor and pass protection. Like I said, I think he's a guard, and I actually kind of liked his tape. And going up against Oklahoma, you've got two guys there. In that defensive front seven, you got Eric Stryker, who had two sacks last week. Bit undersized, you know. People are kind of wondering what kind of role he'll play. If you listen to the Journey to the Draft podcast a couple weeks ago, Chris McPherson and I had a pretty long discussion about him. He had heard that people compared him to Von Miller in the way that he's used because it's a, you know, he's a little bit undersized in that 6'2", 220 range. So you're not playing that guy as a 3-4 outside linebacker at that size. But he's used as a pass rusher, really good athlete. I've heard some people like him as a safety, some as a mic backer, some as a will backer. Really interesting guy. And then Charles Tapper is a guy I really like, who's a defensive lineman, shifts all over the line of scrimmage for them, and has some athleticism, really good run defender, uses his hands well. So Whitehair will have his hands full with this Oklahoma defensive front. So very interesting stuff. Well, let's wrap the show up. Thanks again to Greg, to Ike, to Bill, and to all of you out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and, of course, on PhiladelphiaEagles.com or the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And if you get the time, go on, rate the show, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Shoot me a question. I want to hear from you guys and keep all of you happy. So wherever you listen, just go shoot us a comment, and we can keep making this show better each and every week. Really appreciate all of you out there as well that spread the word on social media. All that being said, I think that'll do another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my producer, BT, I'm Fran Duffy. We'll talk to you next week.